Accession number 17581, Reel 3.
Mr. White, Reel 3. You were just telling me about orders to hold the line at Hot
Rock. Hot Rock, that's right, yes. And Monty was building up reserves at the back of us all the time. They were landing guns and troops and reinforcements. That's why we had to hold that line there whilst he built up behind us.
Were the Germans launching counterattacks?
Oh, all the time. We were pushing him back, he was pushing us back. That was happened for 2 months like that. To and fro the whole time. He couldn't break through us. That's what he was trying to do, to get at the beaches, you see. But we held him. Our division held him. Not only us, but...
Did the Germans fight much differently in Normandy from how they fought in Sicily?
Oh, they're very good. They're a good opponent to be against the Germans. No doubt about that. And the actual German serviceman, we didn't mind. I mean, we captured him. He was like us. He was doing his job. It was the SS and the Gestapo people we'd had no time for, whatever. We had no quarter with them. But no, they're a good fighter, the Germans, no doubt about it.
But did you take SS prisoners?
Yes, on the landing, we were told no prisoners. You couldn't afford to. You had nowhere to put them, you see, so... That was the order on landing. But as you got inland, then you took them, naturally. And yes, we got quite a few. But on our landing, we lost 182 killed and wounded, the Hampshire alone, on our landing.
Did any fire come near you on the actual D-Day landing?
Quite a bit. Quite a bit. The lead's already gone forward then. And see, the thing is, when we landed, the Navy never stopped landing craft and ammunition, guns and troops, and the beach was getting cluttered up. And we had to get off that beach onto the road with our gun. And it's not like it is today. Aramance today is all nice and flat holiday scene. But then there were sand dunes, all this tufted grass. And in the sand dunes, before you got to the road, they laid mines. And one of our carriers had his track knocked off. So we had to dig the mines out ourselves with our bayonets. They get to the road. Once we got to the road, we had to catch up with our troops again, ahead of us, which we'd done. And we got to Lehamel, hospital at Lehamel. And there he held us up, the Germans. And we couldn't get past him until an engineer's tank came along from Asnells, and he had this petard on the front. It's like a bomb. And he fired 3 shots in the hospital, and that resistance stopped. And then we went forward. And by 8 o'clock in the evening, we captured our main objective, Aramance, the battalion. That was our main objective for that day. And they got it by 8 o'clock in the evening. And I'm very proud of those lads. Just with our sidearms, they were marvellous. We had no tank support, nothing. Not then. We did afterwards, but not on that day.
Was D-Day just as you thought it was going to be, or did it surprise you?
It's pretty hairy, really. But, you know, we had confidence in ourselves, our brigade and our Hampshires, everybody. We'd done it twice, and we couldn't see us failing. And we could have done, but we couldn't see it failing. We never did. You know, 8 o'clock in the evening, and we lost 182 on the actual landing first, and collected casualties, of course, going through. But they were marvellous, really. I'm very proud of them.
So what happened to you once the breakout in Normandy came?
Then that was wonderful. The weather was lovely, and we advanced. We had the Guards' armour in front of us, and the Hampshire was beyond the Guards' armour. And we advanced through France, through Amiens, Arras, and all those places. Reception was marvellous. But we didn't have to stop and fight. If we came to any resistance, we carried on, and lads coming up behind up with them, you see. It was speed was the essence. And we captured Brussels. The Hampshires with the Guards Armour captured Brussels. And reception was marvellous. The craze come out. The next day, we had to rush on and capture Antwerp, which we did. But the craze are more subdued. They welcomed us, but they were getting shelled at the same time we were there in Antwerp. But we captured Antwerp. And was there that I met a Belgian family. I went round to supper that same evening, we captured Antwerp. They raided the German stores. First time I'd seen butter for years and cigarettes. And we had apple fritters, I'll never forget it, apple fritters for supper that night. Next day we moved on again. But from that day, I've kept in touch with that family ever since. And I still have. The mother and father is dead, but the son, he's 70 now. He was over here this year, still in touch with me.
What is the name of the family?
Wyden. Yeah, wonderful family. And I've kept in touch ever since, all those years.
How did you actually meet them in Antwerp?
We stopped inside of a school. And the chap who came over here this year, now he's 70, he was a young lad of 17 then, with a girl. Naturally, he came up to us, prayed to see we kept at their place, believed out all those years, we'd give them cigarettes we'd haven't seen for years, English cigarettes. And that evening, he turned up with my officer, I was talking to him, could I come in to his house for supper? His father'd like to see me. So I asked the officer if I would go, he said, yes, you can go, I know where you are. I went round, it's the first time I met them. His mother and father, and this girl's mother and father, and Ron Wyden, the one who's alive now. But since then, the Mr. and Mrs. Wyden's died, and his brother's dead, but Ron's still alive, and he's come over this year. Wonderful family. It was so nice to speak to somebody like that, you know, who appreciated what we'd done. And he was very good to me. We was on rations here in England then, at that time. He'd send me parcels, food parcels for the kiddies and things for years afterwards.
Were they able to speak English?
Yes, perfectly. They were the Belgian tax officers, as it happened. And, oh yes, they could all speak English, and the girl, and Ron, perfect. So there was no trouble with language. Of course, they speak Flemish there, you see, and French. The two languages they got in Belgium. In fact, Mr. Wyden, when he went to work in Brussels, his boss couldn't understand him. He had to speak in French, couldn't speak Flemish. It's one country, it's funny, isn't it?
Did you make friends with anybody in Brussels?
No, I didn't have time, really. He was only there that day. We moved on the next day. The craze, of course, bottles of wine and jumping over your carriage and your tanks. And mad. But Antwerp, they were much more, the craze were there much more subdued. Because they were still shelling the place when we were there. Till the next day, we moved on the next day, over the Albert Canal. Then the Escape Canal into Holland. When we got into Holland, he dug his heels in. Through France and Belgium, it was like being on holiday. Lovely weather. Dashing along beyond the guard's armour. When we got to Holland, that's a different story. He had to resist there, which he did. And went on through Holland. Eindhoven, Nijmegen, captured those bridges. Till we got to Aust. And Aust, that's where I got wounded. That's a terrible place in Aust. He was throwing everything at us. He was cornered there. And there's these Nebelwurzers and these aerial bursts that burst above your head.
What kind of countryside is it round there?
It's not like the Bacard country. In Holland, it was open, more or less. It was trees and things and little forests, but it was more open. But we had him in a corner there, and he let us know it. And it was there that my officer got killed, Captain Reed.
What happened?
He was in the forward trench with a CO, seeing a larder land, and he got wounded in the trench, a bit of shrapnel, which wasn't too bad. And the CO said to him, you better go back to the CCS, as a casualty clearance station, and get that seen to. When he jumped out the trench, he got another lot and killed him. So he'd meant to go, wasn't he? And the CO would come back to me. I'd had my lads in a little cottage brewing up tea, which you always did in trouble. We always brewed tea up. And he came up to me and said, Captain Reed had been killed. He put me in charge. He said, I want you to go up the road and try and find a pioneer officer. That was my friend's officer. So I went up there, come to a corner across a field. There were some houses. I went across this field and there was a big sewer, concrete thing on the surface, which they'd been using at the time, I suppose. And I got inside there, got a shrapnel, these aerial bursts coming down, you see. I was there about an hour on my own, and I heard these Spandos coming through this orchard closer and closer. And I thought, blow this, I've got to go back and see what's happening. Going back through the village when I got hit by the 88mm shells. But luckily, the door of the cottage was open, and the shells burst in the front room, and I got the bits coming out the door.
Where were you hit?
In the leg, right leg. And I kept running, and it didn't hurt, not the time. I felt something hit me, and I was still running, and gradually I was sinking to the floor. And luckily, I fell to the floor right outside where my carrier was, my gun team. My driver came out and cut my trays down and put a field dressing on. In a couple of minutes, I was away and went to a field hospital. Then the next day, they flew me from there in a bomber plane to Brussels. I was put on a train to come back to England. Went to Dieppe. And it was there, a ship was there, American hospital ship, and the Americans were carrying me out the gangplank on a stretcher, and on the side of the ship I see the word Prague. It was sticking out on like wooden blocks, and he painted all over white. And I said to the American, is this a Channel Cross steamer? Yes, it used to be, he said. It was the same boat I come over 4 years before to France, to Prague. And it was a hospital boat. And they landed at Southampton. I lived in Portsmouth. They put us on a train, took us up to Woking, where you live. And they stopped us at Woking General Hospital. And we were there. We said, what are we here for? You've got a visitor tomorrow, they said. It was a queen, the Queen Mama, she is now. It was a queen. She visited us that day. Very nice, too. The next day, we went up to Scotland. I was 18 miles outside of Glasgow, Killearn. And I'd have been Portsmouth.
What kind of medical treatment were you getting?
Very nice. I got operated on up there. Very good. Lovely place. And when I recovered from that, I was sent to convalescent at Hamilton Racecourse. We were all in the tote, the people in convalescent. He's running around the course in our pyjamas, in our shorts and the blaze, in the snow, getting us fit again. Then they sent us back to Kingston-on-Thames. I was at Kingston-on-Thames in a camp there. And from there I went to Ramsgate, eventually, where we had a RHU, Regimental Holding Unit, at Ramsgate. And on VE Day, I went back to France again, to Belgium, when they're celebrating home here in England. And I had to go to 47th RHU, Regimental Holding Unit. Well, by that time, I didn't know it, but telling them to come back home. I was at Leith in Scotland, teaching the other troops, you know, that are coming along. I got to this 47th RHU, took my particulars, and said, my rank and number and everything. He said, the Hampshire's gone home. I said, oh dear. I was going to go to England, back to join him again. I had a letter from RCO here. He wanted me back. He said, do you play football? I said, yeah. You play cricket? I said, yes. Well, not a staff job. Then my last year I had a staff job in Dendermonde, in Belgium. The war was over, of course, you see. And I stayed there for the year, in Dendermonde. I had a staff job there.
This is Belgium?
In Belgium, yeah.
Did the war have much effect on your life after the war?
Not really.
Had it changed you much?
Well, we learnt about human beings, I must say that. You know, what human beings are really like, which you didn't know before in peacetime and the war.
How do you mean that you learnt about human beings?
Well, we knew how people reacted under stress, which you never knew before, and some could take it and some could not. Whereas it didn't affect me. I've heard people say they get nightmares still, but it didn't me. But some people do. We had quite a few go back with their nerves. like that. But just say it takes you. But it didn't affect me at the time. Not like that. And I think Mortar, I must say this, I think Mortar held our battalion, our brigade, in good stead. Because we learnt all about bombing. We knew what was for us and what wasn't for us. You got that second sense, you know. And they held us in good stead for Sicily, Italy, and especially D-Day. We knew what bombs were meant for us and what wasn't. The same, you could hear the same going. You never fell to the floor. You knew it wasn't for you. And you got that sixth sense, which I think Mortar helped us a lot. That's why I think Monty used us on all these invasions. I think we're the only brigade in the British Army to do three seaborne invasions. 2-1 brigade. That's what we call from Mortar. So we've done Sicily, Italy and D-Day. I don't think anybody else have done that at all.